from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 6 years ago, Anna Holmes dove headfirst into digital media with Jezebel, her online shot at a scrappy, meaningful alternative to mainstream women's magazines. It worked in a big way. Now she's out with Jezebel the Book, a kind of deep dish screen grab of all that, talking and joking with women instead of talking and joking at them. This hour on Point, Anna Holmes, founding editor of Jezebel on the media and women now. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did Anna Holmes reel you in with Jezebel? Were you there from the start, sharing in her takedown of old women's magazines? Women, men, are you there today? What keeps you coming back? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Anna Holmes, founding editor of Jezebel.com and author, compiler of the new book, Jezebel the Book, an illustrated encyclopedia of lady things. Anna Holmes, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This is something. We'll dive into it. I'm looking at just one open page here in the D's. It is like laid out like an encyclopedia. You've got Desdemona and Destiny's Child and Emily Dickinson and Annie DeFranco and Dirty Dancing. We got a lot to look at there. I read somewhere along the way, Anna, of you back in your days as editor of Jezebel, writing herd on, I don't know, 1,000 or 1,500 RSS feeds online, looking for material to feed the beast. What were you doing? Yeah. What's the role as the editor-in-chief of a big, huge blog like that? What were you doing writing all those?
Well, I was not writing most of the...
Taking all that gigantic feed. What were you looking for? How did you turn it into Jezebel?
Well, you know, I had never worked at a blog or on a website before I started the site. So I really was very naive about how those sorts of things worked. That said, I'd worked in media, so I had, you know, a sense of what works as a story and had a sense of what was missing, you know, in the larger marketplace. But when I started the site, I was instructed by one of the executives at Gawker Media, which is the parent company, to get an RSS feed, which is basically, for those who don't know, a way of organizing news stories that appear on the internet in a kind of piece of software. So, for example, I subscribed to the RSS feeds for pretty much every gossip website, and the RSS feeds for pretty much every news, you know, like hard news organization, and these would be in little folders. So I would sit there all day long for many years and see the feed constantly refreshing because, you know, people are constantly posting stuff on the internet, and you know, I would get a sense of what was going on in the world, and then would, you know, tell the writers, you know, suggest links to them, you know, ask them if they wanted to write about it. But it was very exhausting because I had about 3,000. Different subscriptions, which meant that when it refreshed every 30 minutes, there were maybe 400 new things to kind of scan real quickly.
Yeah.
By the time I was done scanning, you know, them, I then had, you know, then refreshed again.
3,000 more refreshes.
Kind of endless, yeah.
I love this image of what it means to be an editor, a kind of shaper of a blog in this case, a big and very successful one ultimately. What to be a shaper of, I don't know, the news, the media flow these days. I pictured you just, you know, sort of sewn into these thousands and thousands of intakes, trying to figure out what to throw to your people and say, write this up, write that up.
Well, you know, and to be entirely fair, like that was a choice that I made. I mean, it was suggested that I have an RSS feed, but it was my choice to subscribe to 3,000 different, and news outlets or blogs. And it was also my choice to you know, always keep them updated or always be looking at them, and then, you know, to pass on stuff to the writers. There are many other websites that I haven't worked for, but I'm aware of where the writers are really more responsible for finding their own stories, but. You know, we had to churn out so much material that I thought it would make it a bit easier on the writers if I helped them find stories as opposed to just, you know, having them go off and do their own searching. So I think they probably appreciated that. What they probably didn't appreciate is that, you know, I would send them emails every 45 minutes with like six different links.
Right. Link. I mean, that's what so much of this is. Describe the genesis of Jezebel for us. It's turned into such a force, lots and lots of people, women and men, I must say, at this point, who turn in there for insight, for a political story, for a laugh, for a celebrity dig or send up, for a sex joke, you name it. In the beginning, it goes back to Gawker. Gawker was this great big success in its own right. But what? It saw that it needed more for women and said, hey, let's rustle something up and make it not like what they've been given before?
I'm going to say that you should stop me if I go on too long. Because, like, the story I think is interesting, but it might be a pretty long one.
I think we're prepared to be interested. Let's hear
okay.
it.
Okay. So in 2006, I was told by a friend who was a friend of Nick Denton, who's the owner of Gawker Media, that he was interested in starting something that they were calling Girly Gawker. That was just a placeholder name.
Help us, for those who aren't even Gawker readers, describe what Gawker is and what it became.
Okay. Well, Gawker Media is a parent company, and there's a website that it's best known for called Gawker.com, which started as a kind of scrappy blog that poked fun at New York media institutions. That kind of expanded in scope to, you know, include entertainment figures and Washington politics and, you know, what have you. But it first started as a kind of New York media chronicler and debaser. By 2000, and I'm not sure what year it started. I think it may have been 2003, 2004. By 2006, it was well known, and, you know, everyone in New York media and even beyond read it. It was, you know, it had adopted a tone that was mimicked all over the internet, which is to say, it was knowing and snarky, and it punched upwards, and, you know, it was scrappy. By 2006, you know, there were a number of different blogs in the Gawker Media Network, not just Gawker. There was Gizmodo, which was about technology and electronics. There was Deadspin, which was devoted to sports. And all of these sites had the same kind of point of view, which is to say they went after the big guys. So in the same way that Gawker would go after Condé Nast Publications, you know, the parent company of many, many glossy magazines like Vanity Fair or Glamour, Deadspin would go after ESPN. Gizmodo would go after Apple.
Of course. And why not? They were the upstarts. They were the gorillas.
Sure. Well, also, I think that, you know, that the feeling was that in traditional media, there was a lot of tiptoeing around some of these big institutions because people didn't want to lose access to them.
Yes.
So, you know, it was very refreshing It was very refreshing the way that all the Gawker Media blogs kind of took on the big boys. So 2006, I hear that they're going to start something called Girly Gawker. Now, I don't, you know,
literally
it wasn't,
they were going to call it Girly
Gawker? No.
Okay.
I think it was just a placeholder.
Yes,
I should ask, though. I actually should go back and ask if they actually ever considered doing that.
Yeah.
And I had worked in women's magazines and worked in women's magazines and celebrity magazines for at that point, I don't know, 15 years. It wasn't what I had aspired to do.
Glamour and in style and all that. Yeah, entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, I liked to think that I was, you know, that my interests were a little more, I don't know, highbrow.
You were bigger than all that, but 15 years is a long time.
It is, and, you know, I had to pay my rent.
Yeah, sure. I get it.
And there are only so many jobs at The New Yorker, and a lot of them go to people, you know, who come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So I felt very frustrated, though, by my career because I wasn't sure where it was going, and I felt like I was kind of spinning my wheels just trying to pay my rent. So I hear about Girly Gawker, and a friend of mine mentioned it and asked if I would be interested in looking into it with her, and I said absolutely not. Because this was still 2006, and the internet was not a place that people who had worked in traditional print media went.
It was unworthy of Anna Holmes.
Well, I don't know that it was unworthy. I don't know that it was unworthy because I was certainly a consumer of the internet.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And I was a consumer, meaning like I read all, you know, Gawker and a number of other blogs. But I think that there was an uncertainty as to whether the internet was really going to be the next big thing in terms of journalism or media. The other thing is that, you know, historically, the internet had not paid very well. There was a period of time when the bloggers on Gawker, I believe, were getting paid $12 a post. And at that point, you know, I'm 34 years old. I can't afford to get paid $12 a post.
Right.
I have student loans, you know, that I have to continue to pay off, you know, and what have you. So I said absolutely not. But then I spent the next 2 hours talking with this person about what the site could be. So there was obviously some interest, right?
Was it clear that it would be different from so much I mean, they were talking girly Gawker. That would be different from traditional women's media. Were you like a, you know, fighting feminist, ready to grab the internet and turn it to your will, or they didn't care? Just bring the women to our site.
Well, you know, what, from what I remember, and again, I think it'd be helpful if I went back and actually asked Nick Denton, if he remembers the specific conversations. But from what I remember, you know, he wanted to start a site geared towards women that had coverage of fashion and celebrity, which, you know, and I'm not opposed to fashion and celebrity as topics. I'm just not that interested in them. Mm-hmm. And yet I felt, like many other women, that was the only sort of thing that was being served up to us in mainstream media, was like an obsession with consumer goods, with fashion, with looking a certain way, and that, you know, traditional women's media did not reflect the breadth and diversity of female interests. So on the one hand, you have me being very frustrated for many, many years, having, you know, helped put out content that I kind of hated, you know, these women's magazines.
Yep.
And then you have the kind of Gawker media ethos, which is to punch up. And so it was kind of a perfect fit. So, you know, I wasn't sure if it was going to work. I wasn't sure if taking subjects like celebrity and fashion and, you know, talking about them in a smart way, but
and weaving in politics and weaving in some
real
tough cultural critique as well. Turns out it worked like crazy. Anna Holmes was founding editor-in-chief of Jezebel, Jezebel.com. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour with the founding editor of Jezebel, Jezebel.com, Anna Holmes, about women in the world now and the popular blog she created that said, less nonsense, please, more truth, more fun, sex jokes, welcome as well. Anna Holmes is with us. She's out with a new kind of coffee table book of all kinds of stuff about all kinds of things. Maybe women first. It is the Book of Jezebel, an illustrated encyclopedia of lady things. You can see an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Anna Holmes joins us from New York. Started Jezebel in 2007. By 2011, they had made a big enough name for themselves. They were being sent up on NBC's sitcom 30 Rock. Here's a little bit where the character Jenna, played by Jane Krakowski, discovers she's been prominently featured on the homepage of a fictionalized version of Jezebel. They call it joanofsnark.com. Here it is.
I made the internet.
You're on joanofsnark.com?
On what?
Joan of Snark. It's this really cool feminist website where women talk about how far we've come and which celebrities have the worst beach bodies. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Okay, they're already by 2011 talking about, I don't know if that's punching up or punching down Anna Holmes, but we'll sort of migrate toward the story of how that big snark label got laid on Jezebel. Well, yeah, let's just set that to the side for a second, because it's very interesting. How did you decide how to lay this out? What to put on the pages of Jezebel when you got the power?
When I got the power. basically, well, okay, it was a couple of things. It was what my writers were interested in. I mean, if they were going to sit at their computers all day long, you know, for 10 hours straight and just churn out copy, you know, they were in their apartments and, you know, in comfy clothes, but still, it's a lot of work. I wanted them to be interested in what they were writing about. So there was definitely, you know, an edict that it has to be related to women. But, you know, women have varied interests. So, you know, and there were some writers who were really into pop culture. So they wrote about the pop culture stuff. And there was a writer who was very into politics. And she wrote about politics. But, I wanted to make sure that they were genuinely interested in what they were writing about. Because otherwise you could have told, you know, you would be able to tell in the writing.
And the meta message that would come up out of Jezebel, if you just sort of stumbled in and began reading, what would it be saying to you?
The meta message. Well, okay, I'll put it this way. We were trying to be a little bit subversive by using pop culture as an entry point to talk about gender politics and feminism. Mm-hmm. So if you had just stumbled on the site, you would see pictures of celebrities, or, you know, pictures of covers of celebrity magazines and, you know, fashion shows, and you would think, oh, this is a website for women. But if you actually read the content or the headlines, you would see that, you know, humor was being deployed as a way to kind of draw people in, and that there was a certain pointedness and opinionatedness among the writers about the status of women in contemporary America. And, you know, women have come, you know, the status of women has come a long way, but there's certainly a lot of sexism and misogyny out there. And I feel that we all felt that there were issues that were not being discussed that are of importance to women. So I'm not sure that answers your question.
No, but, I think that's good. I mean, so you plenty of celebrity stuff there. I mean, if you go there today, I mean, the very top story, get your hands on this ridiculously perfect leather bucket bag. You know, it's a purse. Now, that's sponsored
content.
Well, that
content. Might be a sponsored, yeah.
Yeah, but it's right up at the top of the page. It looks just like every other story there. but if you read on down, you get into all kinds of interesting territory, kind of all this is a sort of a Trojan horse, Trojan mare for what? Did you think of it as a new generation of feminism, or I don't know how you described it to one another?
I don't know. I don't know that I thought of it that way. I think you know, I had grown up and I had self-identified as a feminist my entire life because of the influence of my mother and my father. It was not considered to be a bad word. Mm-hmm. My parents were both activists in any number of ways, mostly before I was born. But, you know, they were very socially conscious. Mm-hmm. As I got older, I became, you know, very aware that the word feminist was a pejorative or had turned into a pejorative, that it was something that a lot of my female peers would not have used to describe themselves, even if they agreed with the kind of dictionary definition of what feminism is.
What year would that be when you were beginning to have that sense of the word?
Probably when I was about 12 or 13, so that would have been about 1985.
Okay, so already by the mid-80s with that sort of aura on it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Susan Faludi talked about this, you know, at length in her award-winning book Backlash, which I believe was published in 91, and she was talking about, you know, the 80s for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, I found that very frustrating. I didn't understand what was so controversial about the idea of economic and social and political equality between the sexes. And I was really disappointed in my peers that they didn't identify as feminists. So, you know, this went on into my 20s. You know, I experienced it in college. I wrote something for the college newspaper actually complaining about the fact that that my peers weren't you know, describing themselves as feminists.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I thought about a new generation of feminists. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to do was just talk about feminism and without apology and repeatedly, because it wasn't being talked about in mainstream media, at least from what I could see. I wanted to do a site that I would want to read.
And at Glamour and in Style, did you have any room for that, or was that out of bounds?
No. Well, I don't know that it was out of bounds. Like it was.
Verboten.
It just like there was no place for it, really. I mean, maybe more in Glamour, which did have stories, you know, about politics once in a while, or more serious things. I mean, in Style, that's just not in its wheelhouse. Yeah. It's about celebrity and fashion, and it does that very, very, very well. But I don't think there'd be any. I don't think you'd ever find feminism or the word feminist in Style unless it was uttered by a celebrity in an interview.
Right.
But it wasn't so much that like these magazines have formulas and they stick to them, and a lot of the formulas involve not rocking the boat. And talking about gender politics is kind of by definition rocking the boat. So that's why you really didn't see, at least back then, a discussion of gender politics or feminism in mainstream women's magazines. And, you know, the business, like these are businesses, and they don't want to scare advertisers. And I'm not giving them a pass on this. It was very frustrating, believe me.
And you went right at them once you got the wheelhouse of
your own. Absolutely. But I also understand where it was coming from.
Yeah.
So.
Anna Holmes was founding editor of Jezebel, Jezebel.com. She's out with the Book of Jezebel. Anna, please stand by, New York. Listeners for you, Leah in Worcester, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Anna Holmes. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Tom. I'm a feminist, and I'm a working mother in high tech, and I read Jezebel every day. And it's the one place on the internet where I don't fear looking at the comments below the articles. Those are actually just as informative and interesting to read as the articles themselves. Mm-hmm. And there's no other place that I can read political news and not go to the comments and be terrified.
Yeah, the comment threads can be pretty terrifying, pretty over the top. What about the main offering there at Jezebel? What do you come back for? Is it the celebrity stuff, the kind of wink and joke sex
it's
stuff?
Is
it the political?
It's the politics. And that's largely what I read when I go to Jezebel, literally every day.
Every day, and is it, does it become your, I don't know, your talking?
It's my news source, yeah. Really.
Yeah. Incredible. You start out with let's make a girly gawker, and the next thing you know, Leia's reading it as her main politics news source.
That makes me really happy. It makes me so happy. And actually, you know, during the 2008 election, you know, at this point, the site was about a year old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I figured that we were going to go all out with our coverage of the
Hillary
primaries.
Clinton, and then
yeah, totally.
Sarah Palin
it was historic. Mm-hmm. It was historic. But the commenters loved it. You know, if there was any doubt that young American women, and by young, you know, I mean 18 to 50, or, you know, because like that was like kind of our demographic. If there was any doubt that American women were interested in politics, that year on that site, you know, blew it out of the water, because those were some of the most clicked on, commented on, argued about posts that we had on the site. It was really a very heady, exciting time to see all of these women engaged in this election. It was amazing.
How did you keep your comment threads from becoming sort of troll fests, you know, of ugly insults and all the rest that are so common? You did have a system for that, I guess. What was it?
There was a commenting system within that was on all the Gawker websites, number one, which did not allow anyone just to come to the site and just type something in and post it immediately. If you were a new commenter, your comment had to be approved by a moderator. The moderators, or the people who had moderating capabilities, were mm-hmm. myself and my staff, and then there was a kind of designated moderator who was like an uber commenter, like a commenter who had proved that she was fair-minded and smart. And
you could keep up with the flow of new commenters? I mean, our website gets so many sometimes I can't imagine signing off on every single one.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, it's been 3 years since I ran the site, and I assume that the number of commenters on the site is just, you know, has probably exploded since the time that I was there. We had a lot of commenters, and they were very vocal. But, you know, I would take a cursory look through the comments after each post went up. And, you know, here's the thing. We didn't get a lot of trolls, which is to say people from the quote-unquote outside who were trying to start mm-hmm. trouble. There were certainly arguments all the time in the comment threads, you know, between the writers of the posts and the commenters, but, you know, among the commenters
sure.
themselves. And, you know, it was not something, you know, it's kind of vibrant and amazing as the community, the commenting community then was, and I really do appreciate it. There were times when it would really, you know, wear on me or get me down, because there was a lot of criticism. You know, I felt like
every time we put up a post,
it was like, yeah.
But you had your Jezzies, your Jezebels, kind of mm-hmm. the readers on the inside. And mm-hmm. Leia, even now, reads and says it's not got quite the same sometimes madcap viciousness that a lot of threads have. Jillian in Buffalo, New York is calling. Jillian, you're on the air with Anna Holmes. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, as a 20-year-old female college student and someone who would identify as feminist, I would definitely have to say that I couldn't find an outlet, you know, for somebody who's just looking at something, you know, from a political point of view. You know, I just want something that isn't biased and isn't, you know, it's tailored for me and the general public, you know, and I didn't know about Jezebel, and I actually still haven't checked it out, but this show, I just turned it on and I was like, wow, this is incredible. You know, I was captivated the whole time. I was like, wow, they actually have something for women that is, you know, I guess I would say unbiased.
Hey, Jillian, if you're 20 years old and you don't know about Jezebel, what do you read when you want sort of a women's media, if I may put it that way? What have you turned to?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, what is there really to turn to? Usually, you know, what do most people read? Like Time, Newsweek, but like, you know, even on the internet, I feel like there's not much out there for women. So this is definitely like an innovative sort of concept.
I hope you'll comment on our website about what you find when you go there. I don't. If you're thinking Time and Newsweek, this is a very different flavor, a lot more attitude, a lot more snark, a lot more sex and celebrity than Time and Newsweek would have, but a lot of politics right in there. Anna Holmes, how is it possible that a 20-year-old doesn't, and respect, Jillian, I appreciate your call from Buffalo, but she doesn't know about your, it's interesting, it's a reality check, isn't it? She seems plugged in and it's not on her screen.
Well, a lot of people don't know about it. I mean, it's funny, you know, if I'm traveling around and someone says, you know, tell me about your life, and I'm talking about this book coming out, for example, and I'll say it's branded to a website I created called Jezebel, and they'll look at me kind of blankly. But, you know, that's not – I don't expect everyone to have heard of the website. I mean, I know that certainly within people who pay attention to media, who are kind of media watchers, mm-hmm. yeah, everyone within the media knows it. But I don't – you know, I don't expect that that your caller would necessarily know. I mean, I would hope so.
What's your gut tell you about Jillian? You can hear a kind of sincere interest in politics there. This is a serious young woman. When she goes to Jezebel,
I don't know that she's going to like it I don't know that she's going to like it because it's absolutely biased. It is totally biased. It is not fair. It is not, as you know, in the words of Fox News, fair and balanced. It is. It has a very specific point of view. It has a feminist point of view. It is. Is much more liberal on the political spectrum than it is conservative. I don't think there's anything conservative on there at all. In fact, oftentimes a certain political party gets made fun of with regularity on that site. So if she's looking for something that's unbiased, it's probably not for her. But if she's looking for something that has a lot of personality and a point of view, it's absolutely for her.
Jillian in Buffalo, let us know at onpointradio.org in the comments. We'd love to hear from you what you think of it as you peruse. John in Dothan, Alabama. John, you're on the air with Anna Holmes in New York. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just was wondering, Anna, if you were happy with where Jezebel has gone in the past 5 years, I kind of obviously I'm not your target demographic, but I do kind of feel, I like to think that, you know, I'm up on women's issues. I care about women and issues that affect them. But often whenever I log in to Jezebel, I feel, you know, attacked, or that there's a certain level of maybe militancy in the tone of the articles. And is that what you were going for when you founded the site, you know, 5 years ago?
Hey, John, may I just ask, do you feel attacked because you're male, or because maybe your politics are different from Jezebel's? What makes you feel attacked there?
Mostly simply because I'm male. I'm very liberal, and I like to think that I'm, you know, very open-minded, but a lot of times when I read articles on Jezebel, I feel like really the whole, you know, half of the human race is kind of put on the defensive. And, yeah.
Okay, we got it. Anna Holmes, woman warrior. Is that the idea?
I don't know that the idea is to attack men, but, you know, like there are certainly a lot of structures in society that are male dominated and patriarchal that the site goes after and has gone after for a long time. You know, it's interesting that the caller is talking about militancy, because I wouldn't describe the site like that at all.
No.
In fact, I think that usually when the writers are going after specific people, you know, public figures or structures, they're doing it with a lot of humor, which can be very biting. You know, there's a reason that I think a lot of the best humor comes from anger. But I don't know that – I'll put it this way. The site was created because I wanted to have something out there that I would want to read as a woman, and that my peers would want to read. I didn't really take men into consideration. That wasn't part of the
– Not your job.
No. And you know, I was pleasantly surprised when I became aware that there were men that were reading the site, and a fair number of them. I think there was a pretty substantial percentage, which, you know, it was in the double digits. And it wasn't, you know, 40%, but I think at least 15 or 20% of the readers were male. And a lot of them, you know, interacted with the other commenters in the comments. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm sorry that he feels that way, but that's just what the site is. And there's also plenty of love for men on the site as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the founding editor of Jezebel, jezebel.com. Anna Holmes is with us from New York. She was there from the beginning back in 2007. She's out now with a big kind of coffee table book encyclopedia, the Book of Jezebel. It's called An Illustrated Encyclopedia of Lady Things. A lot of smart, sassy, interesting entries, alphabetical front to back on all kinds of issues. In the D's, Desdemona, Destiny's Child, Diana, Roman Goddess of the Moon and Hunt, Emily Dickinson, Annie DeFranco, Dirty Dancing, Christian Dior, Joan Didion. You get the idea. Anna, lots of interesting commentary for you online. Kathy on Facebook says, love Jezebel. Glad the young feministas are keeping up the fight. Gives this feminista fossil hope for the future. So there you go. There's the handoff. Joni says, thank you for observing and naming things for what they truly are. And she particularly says, your discussions of media coverage of rape cases in Maryville, Missouri, Steubenville, Yukon, as well as your skewering of U.S. rape culture at large have been among the most well-researched, heartbreakingly frank content I've found. Keep up the great work. So there's an atta girl, I guess. Emily says, Jezebel has a lot of really silly content, such as the tampon piece I just read. I guess you cover the waterfront right there.
I think I know which one she's talking about.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about that. Like, Gawker wanted you out there. Maybe there was some idealism, but they wanted numbers. Everyone on the web wants numbers. And what about the press? The pressure for page views. Does it line up with your editorial highest ideals, or is it in tension with them? How's that play out at a site like Jezebel?
I think it was in tension and it lined up. For example, the site, when the site started, I think that it filled a vacuum or a void or a niche that there was a real hunger for. Mm-hmm. From the get-go, it was growing at a pretty great rate. I was never concerned that we weren't going to get readers interested. I just wanted to keep them. Like, I knew they'd come check it out, but I wasn't sure if they were going to stay. But, for the first year, the traffic just went up and up and up. And I think that was indicative of the fact that there was a hunger for the sort of content that we were providing. As the years went on, there were times when we would do content that I wasn't particularly interested in, but I knew might get a lot of traffic. But
like,
I
what
didn't...
are you talking? Kitten photos or sex bits,
sure,
or what?
Sure. Yeah. Actually, you just hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
Sex
kittens
stuff
and sex
and animal stuff.
I mean, there's a thing on there today about firemen doing some kind of resuscitation of puppies. And, firemen and puppies, and it's like, wow, is that the sexiest thing ever? okay.
Well, also some of that sort of content, whether it's, the puppies or something about sex, also kind of served as interstitial or breathing space between the posts that were more intense and perhaps upsetting. So, yes, a lot of the readers really like animals. I like animals. I like looking at pictures of animals. So we would put pictures of animals up. But it was also a way to kind of, step back after reading or, writing
take a breather.
A particularly upsetting, piece about Steubenville. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cosmo uses sex all the time. Most traditional women's magazines do in one way or another. Jezebel uses sex plenty. I say uses advisedly there, but has lots of things related to sex. What's the difference in Jezebel's approach to sex from the traditional magazines that you worked in?
Well, with women's magazines, when they cover sex, it tends to be very service oriented. Like, here's how to have a better sex life, and oftentimes it was geared towards women. Well, first of all, there was an assumption that all of the readers were heterosexual, so it was always talking about how to please a man you're a woman. But there was a kind of like service aspect to it that I found very kind of patronizing, because I don't know that you can really tell anybody how to do anything, whether it's sex or how to bake a souffle. I mean,
you don't do 10,000 ways to a great orgasm.
No. We tended to talk about sex in terms of personal anecdotes or making jokes, but not in a way where we were purporting to have an answer and then sharing it with the readers as to how to do it better. a lot of what fuels these traditional women's magazines is this idea of being the perfect woman, looking a certain way, buying the right clothes, how to find a man, how to keep your man, how to please your man. I didn't want anything to do with that. I mean, we have enough stresses in life as it is, and I don't think that first of all women are heterosexual, and number two, I don't think that all women, you know, need to be or are obsessed with finding a romantic partner at all times. It really, you know, it made the women's magazines made the search for a mate feel like it should be the most important defining thing in every young woman's life. And I think that, you know, you go through phases.
Sure.
And sometimes those phases involve your career. So I just didn't want to, you know, talk down to our readers. And with regards to sex, I felt, you know, that historically in women's magazines that they had been kind of, you know, condescending and patronizing, and also just silly, you know, with suggestions of using like a scrunchie, you know, for your hair on your partner in some, you know, yeah, kinky way, just like dumb stuff.
Right, plenty of that, no question. Carol in Providence, Rhode Island, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Listen, I just wanted to, I don't know if anyone's mentioned Erin Gloria Ryan yet.
Writer for Jezebel.
Yeah. Phenomenal. Yeah. Writer. Couple other writers, Lindy West. Is her name Dodi Stewart?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dodi Stewart, yes.
Great writers, funny, smart. I mean, this site is, I read it all the time, and I'm kind of getting out of your demographic. I'm 49 years old, but, you know, it makes my heart so glad to see younger feminists coming out unapologetic about the things they care about, whether it is, you know, firefighters rescuing puppies, or whether it is just the ridiculousness of women's magazines, or whether it is rape culture. I think it's wonderful to have all that out there and for people to see, you know, these are feminists who are not apologizing for that term. These are young, smart women, and this is our future. It's just, it's very exciting to me.
Carol, you're 49. They're probably younger, and they're feminist in their own way. How is it different from what the, if I may, you know, presume the feminism that you earlier exercised, had, your perspective back in...
I hope half. But
yes.
Yes. I hope that for me, I think the lesson that they've learned is that if you're not funny, nobody's going to listen. And that if you are funny, you know, even if people are hurting, because, yeah, really great comedy, sometimes it does hurt. You know, sometimes nobody in the room is safe. But that's, you know, that's the nature of the beast, and get people thinking, get them laughing, get them thinking. I think it's really just an amazing, amazing site.
Sounds like a good formula. You got good instincts there, Carol. Sorry, Anna, please.
Oh, I was going to say, well, I'm really glad that Carol brought up Erin Gloria Ryan, because Erin is kind of like my dream person, which is to say she was a reader of the site and a commenter, and a very popular commenter, because she was hilarious. And she was on that site all day long in the comments of every single post.
Yep.
And then she ended up getting hired to write for the site. And she's fantastic
it's
at
the
it.
It's the Cinderella story of the internet age.
But she really was plucked from the depths of the commenting community.
That's
and has done such great work. And I don't know that I could ask for anything more. That a young woman would have been so moved by the content on the site that she would completely change her career, because I believe Erin worked in banking, and you know have become what she is today. So it's really very inspiring. All of the writers are fantastic, and all the writers that Carol just mentioned are just, you know, I don't know that I could do what they do.
Hey,
I could certainly run the site, but I don't think I could write the way that they do.
No, they're terrific. But, I mean, if the internet doesn't open up new ways up, then what's the point? Some people point to you as an example of this, Anna. I mean, after all, there you were in style. Now, you know, you're writing columns for the New York Times book review. I'm reading you here in The New Yorker. I mean, it's interesting that you sort of catapulted up on a blog, which one might not have thought would be the avenue a decade ago, to the tip top of the traditional media world now.
I don't think I'm at the tip top of the
New York Times, New Yorker. I mean, there's not a whole lot of headroom beyond that. I don't know what you'd cite.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just, but yeah, I wouldn't, I don't think of myself that way. But, you know, I had written for, like, before the site ever started, you know, I certainly, as I said, I'd worked at a number of women's magazines, and I was slumming it, as I like to put it. But, you know, I had published stuff in higher brow publications. So I don't feel that there was a major shift after the site started and became successful. I just think I was more high profile. and you know, and I've definitely gotten a lot of opportunities because of that. But I don't feel like my life totally changed. I just And you know, to be honest, you know, for the 3.5 years that I ran the site, I was really inside like 20 hours a day working on the site. I lived in a little bubble. I had no sense of really like what was going on, how this – I mean, I had a sense of how the site was being received, but I didn't know if it was actually having an impact in a larger way.
And look at you. You unbuckled, stepped out, and snapped up just like that. Let's go to Sarah in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hello, Tom. Hello,
Hi.
Anna.
Hi.
Hi.
Two of my favorite media outlets kind of connecting at once. I'm so excited.
Great. What do you think?
Yeah, I wanted to just share that I've been reading Jezebel for years. I grew up as a third-wave feminist, subscribing to Sassy Magazine, Vox Magazine, and now that we have the internet, I was so happy to come across Jezebel years ago and avidly refer to it. It's one of my main media sources, as another reader, as another listener referred to earlier. When big news breaks, or even for day-to-day things, I'll just go on Jezebel, see what's going on, see what the other perspectives are. And the reason I do that is because it matches sort of those other media outlets that I grew up with, that I mentioned before. But also, it's just really strong counterpoint to what I feel is not a very gender-neutral mass media that we're all exposed to. So I just want to thank you again for all the work and for putting Jezebel out there.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. I'm really happy to hear everything that you just said, and very flattered. And I know, you know, that everyone who works on the site and has worked on the site would say the same. It's interesting when you talk about that it's your main news source, because I think you know, in the beginning, if there was some sort of breaking news that wasn't in the kind of Jezebel wheelhouse, I tended to ignore it. So let's say an airliner crashed somewhere. That wasn't something that I would feel compelled to put up an alert about. But the thing is that the readers on the site were so devoted, which is to say they were there all day long, that I got the impression that they would, you know, appreciate kind of breaking news updates, even if they weren't in the Jezebel, you know, wheelhouse. So we did start doing things that were maybe felt like a little not our specialty, but yeah, it was interesting just because they were refreshing the site, you know, every 5 minutes, and if a post didn't go up when it was supposed to go up, then believe me, I would hear about it.
Charles in Staten, Virginia. Charles, you're on with Anna Holmes.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to call. I had heard that previous caller, the male that called in, and it almost sort of sounded maybe like he hasn't seen the site. As a male, I don't feel, you know, intimidated. I don't feel like I'm being spoken down to.
Okay.
I really enjoy it. And I wanted to say very briefly that as a male, I even feel like a lot of media doesn't cater to me, you know, because I get stuff like Maxim, and, you know, I'm not that kind of guy. I don't.
Yeah.
And you look at women's magazines and men's magazines. If I open up a Maxim, I'm going to see half-nude pictures of women for most of it. If I open up a women's magazine, I'm going to see half-nude pictures of women for most of it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just makes me so having something that does cater to another audience is just wonderful, and I really appreciate your work.
Charles, thank you so much. It's great to get this variety of views on it from all over the place. If I may, let me get one more right here. Angelina, Providence, Rhode Island. Angelina, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I really appreciate Jezebel's humor. A lot of my friends are going to sites that are very anti-feminist, Total Frat Move and Barstool Sports.
Your women friends, Angelina, or your male friends?
Both, actually.
Wow.
A lot of girls now, you know, think it's kind of funny to make fun of women's bodies and that sort of thing. And it's nice to have something funny to send links to them, you know, to say this is funny too, but it's actually putting women in a positive light.
Angelina, thank you. Total Frat Move and Barstool Sports. Did you imagine yourself, Anna, competing with those for
no,
Jezebel readers?
No, I think that we probably would have just made fun of those sorts of sites. And you know, I mean, we always needed material. And there's no shortage of sexist, horrible material on the internet to make fun of. So,
but here's Angelina's female friends
voluntarily
going and reading those and kind of taking on that angle of humor. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's the way that we've been socialized as women. We've been socialized to see other women as competition. We've been socialized to think that we have to look a certain way. I think that, you know, the sort of sexism and misogyny is not just coming from men, but is oftentimes internalized by women, especially maybe younger women. I mean, I can use myself as an example. I think when I was younger, I mm-hmm. was more likely to be critical of another woman for really superficial reasons that had nothing to do with her and everything to do with my own insecurity. So, you know, I think as you get older and mature, you let some of that go. But, you know, again, we're all socialized in ways that I would argue are sexist, even if we don't think of ourselves that way.
So, big editor, on balance, are women winning? Are they making progress? There's always a to and fro. Is the needle moving the direction you'd like to see it? What's the evidence?
I don't know if I have a good answer to that question because I feel like I feel that there's a certain momentum with regards to women's issues and discussion of women's issues that I'm very excited by. But I also am, you know, highly aware of the fact that there are a lot of assaults on women's reproductive rights around the country mm-hmm. that feels like we're going backwards. There are a lot of really dedicated people who are trying to fight those assaults. But, you know, on the whole, I feel optimistic, but this is just a feeling as opposed to something that really can be quantified.
Anna, we hear your openness. We feel it in everything. It makes you a good editor. I see why you were tapped and why you made something that matters to a lot of people here. Keep it up. Stay open. Stay honest.
Thank you.
We're grateful for it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, really fun to have you. Anna Holmes, she was founding editor of Jezebel, Jezebel.com. Out now with The Book of Jezebel, an illustrated encyclopedia of lady things. You may find it on your coffee table. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Tomorrow in this hour, we will talk about the evolving depiction of slavery in American film, from Gone with the Wind and Django to the latest 12 Years a Slave. Don't miss that. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.